Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
Whenever I hear people talk about sex and marriage, or I read articles about sex and marriage, I'm reminded of a Baby Blues cartoon that I saw years ago. And there's the man, he's reading the newspaper, and he says to his wife, "Honey, it says here that the average married couple has sex 2.6 times a week." And she looks back at him and she says, "Is that the average newlywed couple, the couple that's been married 30 years, the couple that has two kids in diapers? Who is it about?" And he goes, "Well, it doesn't say." And she says, "Well, it should. There should be truth in advertising." And, you know, I love that, because you may be surprised to know that some recent studies have found that married people actually have more frequent and better sex than their single counterparts. But we have this idea in our society that marriage is the place where sex goes to die. And for some couples, this can be true. And it can be, unless you make sex and intimacy a priority in your life. So couples coach and writer Kyle Benson is here today to talk about how you can be married and have a great sex life too. Not or, and oh, by the way, with the same person. It doesn't have to be outside. So Kyle, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So I was reading your recent piece that was on Huffington Post, "If You Want a Great Sex Life, Don't Be Scared to Work at It." And you compare that, the approach that we're encouraged to take with our careers and our health, with how we're taught to look at sex. So what's different? What makes our view of sex and intimacy so different?
I think it's the beliefs that we have about how sex and our relationship should be. We have these feelings and kind of these cultural narratives that tell us that sex should be effortless and spontaneous. And it's interesting. I've kind of wondered where that comes from, and maybe that comes from the Disney upbringing many of us have had, or comes from religion. There's a lot of different places that could come from. But we have this story, especially in committed relationships, that, oh, it should be happening. But the problem is, even when you first started dating someone, sex and even intimacy didn't just happen. There was always an intention of making it happen. Like when you go out on a date, usually the guy gets dressed up, cleaned up, the girl gets on a nice dress and looks very nice, and you give yourself the time to commit to each other, to get to know each other, to explore and understand each other. But then as the relationship evolves and you become a committed couple or you get married and you start having kids or stresses in jobs, all of a sudden marriage and sex kind of takes the back seat. And it comes with this cultural belief that, oh, well, you know, we should be, when there's chemistry, things are going to happen. We're going to have sex and things are going to, you know, be amazing. And that's the story that really gets us into the problem that we think it should just be spontaneous.
I love your point, because it's so true. When we're first with somebody, we're making an effort. We're actually, although I don't think people realize that's what they're doing. I mean, I think they just do it. But you're right. It is actually taking the time to try to make yourself look good, to be interesting to the other person, to spend time trying to find out what pleases them, what they'll like. And that kind of creates that whole sense of spontaneity. I mean, and yeah, let's not also forget that there's some hormones involved when, you know, neurotransmitters and hormones when we first meet somebody. I call it the time it takes to meet, mate, and procreate. You know, once we have the kids, now everything's settled. It's, well, I think about 18 months is about the length of time. But why do we look at sex or intimacy as, I mean, because I know as a working with couples, I don't necessarily say you need to schedule sex, but I do say you need to schedule time to be in the same place at the same time so that sex might possibly happen. But there's such resistance to that. It's not spontaneous.
Yeah, and again, it's just because, like you said earlier, is even when people start dating, they start getting to know each other, it feels effortless. But the emotions, and maybe it's the hormones, are kind of biologically, they're driven to give the relationship time to grow and get to know each other. But then once they get in that committed relationship, you know, a lot of people, they stop doing that. And there's, you know, if you see like couples that have date nights, they tend to be a lot more intimate than couples that, you know, are really focused on making sure their kids are doing well or focused on their careers. And I was even reading, I was reading Wired for Love, and he talks about the importance of morning and evening rituals with your significant other.
Mm-hmm.
And how, like, even just the moment you walk in the door, coming back from being separated from your partner, if you give them a hug and you show them that you're excited to see them, that makes it way easier to talk about the difficulties. Whereas if you come in the door, you talk about your stress, you go into the TV room and watch TV and she's cooking dinner or something like that, it sets a different playing field for how the relationship is going to feel that night.
I think you said something about when we first meet and it's effortless. And what went through my mind when you said that was it's where our focus is, that we are actually paying attention to this other person, to the relationship, And I think that's what you're talking about also with these rituals, that I've now changed my focus from work or the kids or whatever, and you're now back in my focus. Our relationship is back in focus. And I think that that may be kind of what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, it totally is. And a lot of couples that I have worked with, I mean, I had one client, she said that they leave sex for the 15 minutes before they go to bed, or pretty much before they fall asleep. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, you got to give a priority to the sex, but not even just the sex, just to allow yourselves to connect with each other, to be intimate. And again, it's just, you know, we focus on our careers, and all of a sudden the house gets out of mess, and we don't feel like we have time. But it's like anything that you prioritize in your life. If you're going to prioritize getting healthy and fit, then you find time to go to the gym and you rearrange your schedule to do that. If you want to prioritize on your relationship, then you need to find time within your schedule to make that happen. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a 3-hour-long night. Even just 25 minutes of having a conversation, talking with your partner or coffee, makes a huge difference in the relationship as opposed to just kind of waiting for things to happen.
Because we don't do that in other aspects of our lives. We don't just kind of wait for a job to show up or wait for, you know, we actually go out and actively pursue these things. But somehow, I guess, sex and intimacy and whatever is supposed to happen in the 5 to 10 minutes that we give it, and, you know, And then we wonder why we feel disconnected from our partners.
Exactly. And we expect it not to give it attention and then it still to be like this flourishing thing. And if you think of like having a plant in your house or a flower, right? If you don't water it, then it's not going to grow. It's going to die. And that's the same thing as what happens in a relationship. If you're not going to, you know, feed it what it needs to continue to grow and to continue to keep the relationship, the emotional aspect of your relationship connected, then it's, you know, you're going to slowly grow apart.
And then people become roommates, and then they find it hard to find their way back to each other. And so in the article, you also talk about committing to sex. Now, what do you mean by that, and why do you think it's important?
Committing to sex, to me, is just making the time to have to have sex, to making the time to be actually intimate. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to plan sex and be like, okay, tonight we're having sex.
It's like Tuesday night, honey, nudge, nudge, yeah. You know what that means, right?
yeah, but it should be still like Tuesday night, hey, it's you and me. You know, we're going to have time together, and what we do during that time is up to us. And I believe in the article also mentioned the girlfriend, my girlfriend and I had that too, where I had this, at the time, I was working just crazy long hours, and it got to a point where I was like, okay, you know, Saturday night, it's you and me. I get you for 4 or 5 hours, and let's enjoy this. Let's go out to dinner, and then, you know, maybe we'll have sex when we get back. And it wasn't, and I think one of the other things is, in our culture, it's very weird to be like, hey, like, I want to have sex tonight. Whereas in other relationships I've had with people from other cultures, that's not very weird. And I thought that was really interesting. With some of the relationships I've had outside of the country, where they're just a little more open that, you know, telling your partner, hey, like, we're going to have sex tonight or I want to have sex tonight, isn't something that's like, oh, okay, well, why are you planning it? Why are you doing it this way? It felt more natural, just kind of, hey, this is how I feel, and, you know, if it happens, it happens, and if it doesn't, it doesn't. But it's about being intentional with the space that you're going to have.
But you brought up something interesting, and doesn't that put pressure on? I know that this is a challenge, especially in the American culture, especially with what I've talked about this before, the not necessarily healthy over-focus on kids when they're in the picture, or even, I would argue, the unhealthy focus on career, where we're not allowing any kind of balance in our lives between the areas of our lives. But, you know, I can see how maybe somebody might feel a little bit pressured if their partner says to them, you know, hey, I really love to have sex with you tonight, and I'm going through my list of, okay, I got to do this, I got to do that, you know, and I think there's some other things that get in the way, or am I just kind of off base?
No, you're totally right. And a lot of people that say that we have conversations with about the struggles with sex, is it's really not about the actual act of sex or the language we use or the styles. It's all about the meaning we give sex. It's about, okay, he just said that he wants to plan to have sex tonight, he wants to have sex with me. Okay, what's that mean to me as, you know, as his partner? How does this conflict with my beliefs about sex? And so what's going on in relationships and all across the world is not only are you communicating on verbally, but there's also those, whatever you're saying or communicating emotionally, physically, or verbally is also being pushed through a filter in your partner's mind, and then they're deciding a mean on what that is, right? So if I were to go up to one of my partners and say, hey, I'm really excited to see you tonight, you know, maybe we will even have sex. And to her, that might cause her to take that like, oh, well, maybe I'm not giving him enough sex right now. Maybe he's feeling neglected. And she could take it in a negative light, even though my intention is not that at all. And so
yeah,
to me...
And I can see that happening.
Yeah, so it's all about what's it mean. And typically, when couples come to work with me, it's about me working with them to get them on the same page of what things mean. And so they can understand, okay, when I say this, and I mean it in a really good, healthy way, and she gets kicked off or upset, then now we can talk about it so I can understand what it means to her and tell her what it means to me, and we can get on the same page.
So you actually introduce the whole concept of, you know, the same word meaning the same thing to both people, which it frequently doesn't. This is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm having a fascinating discussion with fellow couples coach and writer Kyle Benson about how to keep sex alive and thriving in your relationship. And if you are struggling in your relationship around this area, I invite you to take a moment and send me an email or give me a phone call and take advantage of my free, no obligation, discovery session where you can find out how to breathe life back into your relationship. You can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coachingnc.com, or call me at 919-924-0463. Now back to this discussion about sex and intimacy and your relationship. And Kyle, I think that's one of the things that people get confused about. They mix intimacy and sex interchangeably, and they're really not. I mean, yes, they're connected, but we can have sex with people we're not intimate with, and we can be intimate with somebody without actually having sex with them. So how do you define those terms?
I don't think it's up to me to define it for a couple. I think it's up to the couple to define it themselves. And for me, intimacy in my relationships, intimacy is just feeling really connected with my partner and feeling very present with her as she is with me. And intimacy can happen even when you're watching TV. It can be when you're doing dishes. It can happen practically anywhere. And it can also happen in the bedroom. But to me, it's all about being connected. And with couples, trying to get them on the same page, it's not me being like, oh, well, intimacy should be this way or sex should be this way. It's me saying, okay, well, what does intimacy feel like for you? And what does it feel like to be really connected with your partner? And what does sex feel like? Because there are people who have sex with their partner and they're completely shut down emotionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going through the physical motions, but they may not really be present, as you said.
Exactly. And intimacy, as much as we feel it is this amazing thing, it's actually pretty scary, because what you're doing when you truly become intimate is you're becoming vulnerable. You're really letting your partner see you. And I know in my own experiences, I've come up against my own, like, limiting beliefs and barriers on showing who I am, on being completely present and allowing my partner to see my flaws and my insecurities. And personally, I've had, in the past, I had some pretty severe health issues, which left me with a bunch of kind of spots on my skin. And so when I was dating someone during this time, I was very sensitive about allowing them to see me with my clothes off. But when I opened up and became vulnerable enough to let someone see me like that, it actually allowed us to become closer. But to get to that stage, that was very uncomfortable for me and very scary. And with the people I work with, it's the same thing. Sometimes they start to feel intimate and really close to their partner, and they want to get out of it. They want to shut down. And there's a lot of different reasons for that. I actually had another article on the Good Men Project, which talked about, you know, how scary it is to truly want your partner. There's people that want to be desired, but then when it comes to desiring their partner, that becomes too scary. And part of the reason is because, you know, once you become vulnerable and you truly want your partner, then there's a possibility that they could leave you or they could hurt you. And this is one of the, I think, also another barrier that blocks us from intimacy.
Right. And what I tell people, I actually had a client, and she came in with her husband, and I said, okay, what's your goal? What if, when this is all done and things are the exact way you want them to be, what would it be like? And she says, well, I don't want him to hurt me. And I went, well, he's going to. Now, the question is whether it's intentional or not, because, I mean, we're all kind of stumbling through life, and we don't always know the impact of our behavior on others until we've done it. And for me, if you're vulnerable to somebody, if you're open to somebody, if you tell them and show them who you are, your flaws, your less than wonderful aspects, they can hurt you. They can reject you. And I think that's what people are trying to do is, I want you to open up to me and tell me everything about you, but I want to protect myself because I don't want you to hurt me. And they don't understand it won't work that way.
Exactly. And I always tell people that the degree to which you are going to be vulnerable is the degree that your partner will also be vulnerable as well. Because it's kind of, and I think Brene Brown, she has a wonderful quote that vulnerability is the first thing I look in you, but the last thing I'm willing to show you.
Boy, is that dead on.
Yeah, it's exactly, it's dead on.
And so how do we help people, for lack of a better word, not be so afraid? Because it is scary. When I tell you something deep and personal about me, I've given you ammunition. And how do I trust that you're not going to use it against me?
When I work with people, I say you got to give it unconditionally. You know, it's if you trust the person to the point that you want to share your story and share that stuff, then you do it. And yes, they can always use that against you. But part of the relationship and part of taking it to the next level and deepening it and making it stronger is to be vulnerable enough to trust them to share those darker parts of your story and hope that they share that and keep that as a secret as well and realize that, hey, this is kind of our coupled bubble. And what we share in here is between us, and you know, we use it to understand each other. And the other thing about relationships is you learn, okay, when I say these things, it's going to trigger my partner and really get them upset. And so you learn, if you're smart about it, to avoid those things when you're coming up in conversations, to avoid the triggers that are going to get them upset. And in any intimate relationship, you're always going to learn what your partner's vulnerable spots are, what their enduring vulnerabilities are and weaknesses are. And you can either use that against them and be a jerk, or you can use that as a way to love them even more.
Absolutely. And I tell people that when your partner shares something that deep and that intimate and that personal with you, you need to treat it like the absolute precious gift that it is. And not use it against them. And I think people have all had that experience where somebody has done that, and I think it's a process of learning how to trust and learning who to trust and paying attention to some of the warning signals that this person might not be trustworthy. And that's why I always ask people, you know, are you in love with the person, flesh and blood person standing in front of you, or are you in love with the idea of who you think they can be? Because those aren't the same things, and it's got to be the real flesh and blood person in front of you who's telling you who they are.
That's beautiful. Yeah, that's very true.
But you talked about, and I want to have time to talk about this, because you offer something called the intimacy challenge. So what is that, and how can it help a couple?
So on my site, I have I actually have an offering, and it's called the Intimacy 5 Challenge. That builds off of the Intimate Relationship Challenge I have on the homepage. And what I do is I offer 5 challenges that really help couples get more intimate. And most of them don't, I think 4 of them don't have anything to do with sex. It's more about learning how to connect with your partner and facing kind of the anxiety and uncertainty that you're going to face in a relationship when you become vulnerable, when you learn to relax with your partner, and you learn to share more about yourself, and then your partner gets to share that, and so that's kind of what the intimacy challenge is. And I take, and the couples I work with, I really focus on, you know, when problems really happen in a relationship, how can we use that as a catalyst to bring partners closer together and also grow. And the way I see intimacy is I see it as not only a way to get closer to our partners, but as a way to have like a personal growth for ourselves as a transformation. Because as we've talked about earlier, it is uncomfortable. There's a lot of uncertainty. Okay, does this person love me? Do they care about me? Okay, I just shared this really scary and vulnerable story. How are they going to treat that? And it shows you a lot about yourself as well as teaches you a lot about the relationship. And so the Intimacy 5 Challenge I have on my site is one of the things that I offer couples for free to check out and use to learn more about themselves and the relationship.
And I think one of the reasons why it's important to keep sex and intimacy linked is because I can't think of any other time we are actually more physically vulnerable to somebody than at the point of orgasm, because at that point in time, we're really not in control of our bodies, and that's a really vulnerable moment. And if we can get people to be open and vulnerable outside of that moment, it can make that moment so much more exciting and fulfilling and connecting.
Yeah, it can. And the word that was coming up for me is freeing, because you no longer have these shackles of trying to restrain yourself. And you get to just kind of let everything out and really feel into the emotions happening in your body as well as to the emotions and feelings your partner has.
Yeah, and that really can happen, although I think that it's scary, like any other form of intimacy and sharing, it can be really scary. But I really like the idea that you talk about, that it is freeing, that it's the kind of relationship that people say they want to have all the time, but then they get scared on the steps to getting it. So I want to give you the opportunity to tell people where they can find the Intimacy Challenge, other things that you offer couples so that they can improve and really have the kind of relationships they want to have.
Of course. You can check out the articles I write at kylebenson.net. And on that site, I have a Passionate Relationship Toolkit as well as an Intimacy 5 Challenge, which we talked about earlier, that pretty much works on getting you closer with your partner. And the goal and the coaching that I offer is I take relationship conflicts and use that as a catalyst for transformations within both partners and within the relationship.
Terrific. So, you know, as we've been talking, great relationships are no more natural than a successful career or good health. If you truly want yours to work, then you need to pay attention to all aspects of it. Being intentional about all of it is key. It's not really work. I don't like, if you've been listening for a while, you know I don't like that word in relation to relationships. But it's focused behavior. And this is true in the bedroom as well. So if you wouldn't leave your promotion to chance, why would you leave your sex life to luck? So keep listening for more ways to make your marriage great. And until next week, stay loving.